This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. JNSPG staff will read synopses of articles which have been published online this week. The full text versions of these articles can be found in the online and print versions of the journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for December 11, 2009. I'm Carol Chowdhury, and I will be reading synopses of one clinical article, two laboratory investigations, and two case reports, all of which were published online today by the Journal of Neurosurgery. The clinical article, a case comparison study of the subdural evacuating port system in treating chronic subdural hematomas, was written by Anand I. Rugani and colleagues. Several years ago, the subdural evacuating port system was introduced as a novel method of treating chronic subdural hematomas. This is essentially a twist-drill method of treating subdural hematomas. A half-centimeter twist-drill craniostomy is made, and a winged metal cannula is placed in the craniostomy hole to attach a Drackson-Pratt suction bulb. The advantages of this type of system are that it can be performed at the bedside and that it is a hermetically sealed system. With the winged metal cannula attached rigidly to bone on one end and to the suction bulb on the other, an airtight seal is created, thereby decreasing the chances of pneumocephalus. The authors compared this system with burr hole treatment using a case-controlled study. They excluded all patients who had loculated subdural hematomas or a significant acute component and focused only on those patients with homogeneous-appearing chronic subdural hematomas. While shy of reaching statistical significance, the authors did find that about 25% of patients required a second procedure after treatment using the subdural evacuating port system, compared with about 15% after burr hole treatment. This laboratory investigation is titled A Thermal Gel Depot for Local Delivery of Paclitaxel to Treat Experimental Brain Tumors in Rats. It was written by Betty Tyler and colleagues. Paclitaxel, a cellular proliferation inhibitor and radiation sensitizer, is effective against gliomas in vitro, but has poor central nervous system penetration and dose-limiting toxicities when administered systemically. The authors incorporated paclitaxel into a gel depot delivery system. This delivery system is a thermosensitive, biodegradable tri-block copolymer that can be tailored to deliver various agents at different rates. Loaded with paclitaxel and referred to as Oncogel, this delivery system provides an injectable, controlled-release biodegradable vehicle that releases paclitaxel for approximately 50 days and biodegrades within 4 to 6 weeks. In this set of studies, the authors evaluate the safety, biodistribution, and efficacy of Oncogel. They also investigate its potential synergistic effects when given with radiotherapy in rats challenged with intracranial gliosarcoma. Safety studies included intracranial delivery of increasing volumes of Oncogel, and the maximally tolerated dose was determined. In vivo radiolabeled biodistribution studies showed measurable radioactivity throughout the ipsilateral hemisphere up to 3 weeks after the Oncogel injection. Efficacy studies using a rodent intracranial model showed a significant increase in survival with Oncogel treatment. When combined with radiation therapy, the combination was more effective than either therapy alone, resulting in 37.5% long-term survivors. The authors look forward to studying Oncogel further for the treatment of malignant glioma. The next laboratory investigation is titled The Effect of a PP2A Inhibitor on the nuclear receptor co-repressor pathway in glioma. It was written by Zhe, Liu, and co-authors. Nuclear receptor co-repressor, or NCOR, forms a complex that maintains neural stem cells in an undifferentiated state through transcriptional repression. Recently, it has been shown that NCOR is overexpressed in glioblastoma multiforme tumor stem cells, and it helps maintain these cells in an undifferentiated, immortal state. The authors sought to determine the effects of NCOR function disruption in glioblastoma multiforme cells by inhibiting an upstream regulator, protein phosphatase 2A, or PP2A. A competitive small molecule inhibitor of PP2A was developed and designated LB1. In cultured glioma cells, LB1 inhibited PP2A, leading to decreased NCOR expression, and it showed dose-dependent anti-proliferative activity. When used in a murine glioma xenograft model, systemic treatment with LB1 reduced tumor volumes by a mean of 73% compared with controls. After this in vivo treatment with LB1, a reduction in PP2A expression and activity was correlated with the following: reduced nuclear NCOR expression, NCOR cytoplasmic translocation, and increased accumulation of acetylated core histones that coincided with the appearance of tumor cells that expressed glial fibrillary acidic protein. These findings indicate that PP2A inhibition disrupts NCOR function, leading to tumor cell differentiation and/or death. Therefore, targeting NCOR function in the tumor stem cell component of malignant gliomas might be an effective therapeutic paradigm. The case report: superficial siderosis of the central nervous system after ventriculoperitoneal shunt was written by Takeshi Sato and co-workers. The authors report a case of superficial siderosis of the central nervous system after the placement of ventriculoperitoneal shunt for normal pressure hydrocephalus. 2 years later, the patient developed ataxia, appetite loss, and hearing disturbance. MR imaging demonstrated superficial siderosis. The association of superficial siderosis and ventriculoperitoneal shunt therapy is unclear, but repeated impact of the ventricular catheter on the choroid plexus may induce minor intraventricular hemorrhage, leading to superficial siderosis. The authors emphasize that it is important to be aware of superficial siderosis if a patient's neurological condition worsens after ventriculoperitoneal shunt insertion. Jonathan Hyam and co-authors wrote the following report of two cases entitled "Maintained Deep Brain Stimulation for Severe Dystonia Despite Infection by Using Externalized Electrodes and an Extracorporeal Pulse Generator." Deep brain stimulation can produce dramatic alleviation of movement disorders such as Parkinson's disease and dystonia. The incidence of deep brain stimulation infection is 3-5% and represents one of the greatest management challenges for clinicians. In certain conditions, sudden cessation of stimulation can be severely disabling or life-threatening. The authors report two cases in which infection at the site of the internal pulse generator was managed by explantation of the extracranial hardware alone. The electrodes at the scalp were externalized and connected to an extracorporeal pulse generator. Stimulation was continued in this fashion for 4 and 6 months on an outpatient basis with antibiotic cover before implantation of new extension leads and an internal pulse generator. There was no clinical or biochemical evidence of infection after 12 and 18 months of follow-up. Cardiologists have used a similar strategy when dealing with hardware infection by safely attaching cardiac pacing leads to an external pulse generator with no resulting local infections. Therefore, the authors suggest that complete explantation is not the only option in the face of hardware infection and severe movement disorders. Consideration should be given to prolonged externalization of electrodes while maintaining stimulation with the aid of an extracorporeal pulse generator.
Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the JNSPG this week, or to listen to more podcasts from the Journal of Neurosurgery or Neurosurgical Focus, please visit us at thejns.org.